Good afternoon. Welcome to the LaRouche Show for Saturday, June 24th, 2006. This week, Lyndon LaRouche, the head of the LaRouche Political Action Committee and leader of the Democratic Party in the United States, issued some very harsh warning words to the United States, especially to his Democratic Party, because of the Democratic Party and Congress's failure to act in the face of an effort that has been so far successful by the leading financiers of the Sinarchist movement to bankrupt the United States and remove the industrial capacity of this nation, for which really the American Revolution was fought, for the right to produce wealth for the general welfare and for the posterity. That capability of production, of manufacturing, of producing a better life for each successive generation is being ripped apart by the likes of Felix Rohatyn and a gang of financiers who are bankrupting the auto industry. These are the same people who are behind the global doctrine of preventive war that has gotten us into a unbelievably incredible dark age situation in the Middle East, a situation of our own making. I shouldn't say of our own making, because doubt remains today as to whether George W. Bush and Dick Cheney were ever elected. Not in 2000, not in 2004, but that's the subject of a different show. But what LaRouche said this week is time is running out for the United States of America. The seemingly incredible anarchy, says LaRouche, and reckless disregard for reality within the Democratic Party's Senate contingent will cause knowledgeable U.S. citizens and foreign observers to wonder if the USA will still be a functioning nation at the close of this calendar year. Nothing could make that situation perhaps more obvious than the continuing debacle of U.S. policy in Iraq and towards the Arab and Islamic world. 2 years ago, in spring 2004, Lyndon LaRouche presented a solution for the situation in Southwest Asia and for the United States to return to its actual national identity of being a republic. And that would require substantial changes in the world financial system and the spirit of the Treaty of Westphalia. LaRouche's advice was not taken, and we are now in the throes of what looks like a dark age, which was created by Cheney, George Shultz, and what EIR has called the Children of Satan. There still is a way out, but time is running out for the United States of America, as Lyndon LaRouche has said. We're approaching an economic breakdown and a strategic issue. Today, I am honored to welcome two of my collaborators in EIR, both leading members of the Arabic LaRouche movement from Sweden, Hussein Askari, who has readers of EIR will know is a frequent contributor to EIR, and Ali Sharaf from the LaRouche Youth Movement. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you. Hello, Michelle.
And I'd like to first turn this over to Hussein right now and ask, Hussein, will you comment on the situation in Iraq and especially what the world has seen in this past week, past 2 weeks, the debate over whether the United States should come or go or whatever?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm happy to be with you. But first of all, let me just say a couple of words before I go into the situation in Iraq. I mean, look, Iraq has been destroyed, not hopelessly or irreparably, but it has been destroyed to a great extent. Now, the issue which serious people have to look at is what was the policy that has given us the Iraq War? What was the aim of this policy? Was it just to destroy Iraq or other nation states? Now, obviously, anybody who follows the threats against Iran know that Iraq was not the only target. There is a list of nations on the table of the synarchist bankers who control the Bush administration. There's a long list of nations who will be targets. Now, that what people generally do not realize is that the United States of America itself is targeted for destruction by the same policy. It's targeted as the first and most important free republic in modern history. I think we would be able to address this point later in the program, the destruction of the United States economy itself, too, as a similar policy to what actually happened in Iraq. And look, let me just tell the American people from this show one important thing. The United States of America has been losing its credit. That credit, which has been amassed in more than two centuries by Benjamin Franklin, people like George Washington, John Quincy Adams, Abraham Lincoln, Franklin Roosevelt, Dwight Eisenhower, and even John Kennedy. That credit is almost entirely lost. And in the eyes of people outside the United States, and especially in the Muslim world, the United States has almost gone down since the middle of the 1960s from the most respected and admired nation to the most hated one, if it were not for a handful of Americans. And that is Mr. LaRouche and people who are working with him, or people who work in line with his ideas. And many people send us messages to the LaRouche's Arabic website, which I edit and run, and they say that. They say if LaRouche is an American, then there is hope. And if there are such Americans, then we can change the horrible policies of the Bush administration, because only Americans can do that. But one thing which puzzles people around the world today is how come the U.S. Congress and Senate are so gutless at the moment to address their real issues. And there is so much evidence that would not only impeach Cheney and Bush, but would also send a whole bunch of the neocons to the sheriff's office, to prison. Now, the big question is, and what people send to us, is how come that the land of the brave and free has produced such gutless people as we see in the so-called opposition in the Congress? Now, keep that in mind. The world expects great things from the American people. They have to become up to that mission. Americans have great responsibility because they belong to a great nation. It looks in terrible shape today, but could be revived. Now, you have a great tradition and the best constitution, just protect it. But some big changes have to occur in order for that to happen. That is not to blame the American for every people who are saying the future of the world is in your hands now, and you have to act. Now, going back to the debate about pulling out or not pulling out from Iraq, I just referenced Mr. LaRouche's own initiative you mentioned, Michelle, which he introduced two years ago.
The LaRouche Doctrine, right?
The LaRouche Doctrine, yes. Now, I have followed the debate in the Senate and in the American mass media about pulling out of Iraq or not pulling out of Iraq. Well, in spite of the good intentions of some people, anybody who takes Iraq as a separate case is not really serious. First, you have to deal with the criminal policy which created the Iraq crisis, as we just said. The second thing is you can only deal with Iraq in the context which Lyndon LaRouche defined in the LaRouche Doctrine, that is, in the context of the whole Southwest Asia region. And we have to deal with this issue as one package. You have to have two sets of security and peace agreements and one economic agreement for peace through development. Now, the first security agreement is to get the neighbors of Iraq, that's Iran, Turkey, Syria, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, and Egypt, into an agreement with the United States and the Iraqi people or their government to stabilize Iraq and prepare for the withdrawal of U.S. and British troops gradually in a clear timetable. That means you stop the nonsense called war on terrorism, have to work with these nations. You will have to incorporate also Russia and China as partners in this process. That's due to their influence and strategic and historical interest in the region. This is a very important issue also in the light of the last week's summit of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which we can say a couple of words about later if the time allows. Now, the question of an announced timetable for withdrawal is essential because you will have to have the confidence and the credibility with the Iraqi people. People in Iraq think that the Americans are there forever, and they want to steal the Iraqi oil. Now, the second security agreement has to deal with the Palestinian-Israel situation. Mr. LaRouche has said you cannot solve one issue and leave this very deep historical problem unsolved. The U.S. has got to use all its force and authority to get the Israelis to accept a permanent peace, a peace agreement with two-state solution, Palestinian state. They have the right to have their sovereign state. Otherwise, this situation will only lead to perpetual war. Now, the Palestinian issue is key in the whole Middle East history, the last 60 years since the British instigated this crisis. Now, if you deal successfully with the Arab-Israeli issue, you will establish credibility and authority through which you solve other kinds of problems. That is also, as you mentioned, Michelle, LaRouche has reference to the peace of Westphalia. Now, the issue is really what the economic aspect, as I said, is you have to have an economic policy for the region to complement the security and peace arrangements you want to make. And that was what we had missing in the Palestinian-Israeli peace process. There was a failure to address the economic conditions of the population and how important economic development and cooperation for any peace process. It was included in the Oslo Agreement in the protocols, but they were never addressed, and sometimes they were sabotaged. Now, LaRouche warned against such negligence of the economic aspect. Now, we see where it landed, the whole Palestinian peace process. So the economic agreement, as LaRouche argued, has to be centered around nuclear power for desalination of seawater and industrialization. The shortage of water is the greatest problem in Southwest Asia region. You can build small-scale, high-temperature reactors to produce the equivalent of large rivers, actually, of water for the whole region. You will have to introduce what are called, nuclear industrial complexes, where you use the water for agricultural purposes and you use the energy for industrial processes. That includes chemical and other kinds of industries. Now, if you want me to go now immediately into what the conditions are in Iraq, if you want me to.
Well, here's what I'd like you to do, because Hussein, I read an article of yours years ago about such development projects, only it was of another time. You wrote about Franklin Roosevelt and his viewpoint towards Southwest Asia and the Arab world.
Right.
And Mr. LaRouche is advocating, of course, the only solution for the bankruptcy of the United States here itself, where the continental of United States, the economy is going down. We have to go back to Roosevelt.
Right.
Could you compare LaRouche's discussion of this economic to what you think FDR had in mind in ending colonialization? In a way, we're faced with the same problems that he addressed, and that's the way I think about it.
Yeah, right. I mean, you have to remember Roosevelt's big problem, in addition to defeating Hitler, was how to defeat the British Empire.
Right.
His big problem was Churchill, too. But under the war, so his idea for after the war was to establish a kind of relationships with free sovereign nations, that colonization will end, colonialism will end, and you will have what he called an American policy, which will be based on mutual economic benefits. Now, he did this already in establishing a very strong relationship with Saudi Arabia, with King Saud. Actually, already in the mid-1930s. But during the war, actually the last days of his life, he met with the King Saud in Egypt. That was about the end in February 1945. And his idea was to establish a kind of long-term economic agreement whereby the nations who export oil will get something in return. Now, this is not simply money, but it will be like investments, long-term investments in improving the living conditions and the infrastructure for these countries. Now, this is something which the British didn't like that much, but at the time they didn't have much power to change. That is the kind of policy which Mr. LaRouche is also pushing. Now, you have this question of oil. It actually could be, you know, you deal with it in two ways. First of all, you will have to have nuclear power, as the energy of the future, and also an effective way of both industrializing these regions. But also you have, as Mr. LaRouche himself presented this in Abu Dhabi in a conference on oil and world economy, where he said it would be stupid to export raw oil. You cannot export raw oil, but you can actually, if you have an advanced industrial infrastructure, you can be producing, using the raw oil as industrial stock to produce both, you know, in chemical materials and plastics. And the whole region would be an exporter of these kinds of advanced goods rather than just an exporter of raw materials. So the policy, actually, certain people recognize there's a difference between the Roosevelt policy, which is today represented only by Lyndon LaRouche as a political figure, and the policy of free trade or the British Empire, whereby nations are turned into just exporters of raw materials, but there is no perspective for economic, internal economic development and advancement.
I'd like to go a little bit more into the British question that you mentioned by turning to Ali at this point. Ali, I'm told that you gave a class to the LaRouche Youth Movement on the precedence of this neo-imperial policy and these wars and what the British and the French were up to in the 19-teens, almost 100 years ago. So what Hussein has described, this idea of a post-colonial development era among sovereign nation states, this never came to pass because of Roosevelt's death. We have to do that now. We have to use LaRouche's leadership to bring this end of colonialism about. Could you tell us, Ali, about the British and the French and what was known as the Sykes-Picot period?
Well, yeah. I mean, what I went through in the class, you know, to introduce the LaRouche Youth Movement and the youth that were coming also who are now members, was to what different things, what different channels led it to the event of Sykes-Picot, which was a secret agreement to begin with. I went through several personalities. One of them was Al-Afghani and Muhammad Abdeh, his disciple, and so on, and what led to the Muslim Brotherhood. Where I went through the British India office and their recruitment of Abdulaziz Ibn Saud, who was the founder later on of Saudi Arabia, and also the role of Lawrence, T.E. Lawrence, with the Hashemites, and leading up the fight to destroy the Ottoman Empire. Now, all these things are various different events leading up to one thing, which is the geopolitical control, the oil politics, which then emerged after the First World War. And the main thing that has to be put in mind is that the British are just playing the role of the devil, and they're promising everybody something and not keeping any of the promise, and until they see what conditions are they are after the war, and then decide thereupon whether they're going to go with this or that promise or what they're going to do exactly. Now, what I think one thing should be looked at is, for example, Lenin in Russia did not go with this kind of game or this kind of play. He understood exactly that the British wanted a destruction of Russia, but at the same time he did not obey what they wanted, and therefore it exposed the Sykes-Picot and went completely against what the British was wishing for, which is a control over Eurasia. And that is the key thing, if to understand what happened today. You cannot ignore the fact that it's the game around Eurasia, and it's the great game. And that has to be understood. And otherwise, it's going to be difficult to see why the Iraq War came about. Because the difference or the lack, no, sorry, the common thing between 9/11 and the Iraq War is that it created confusion. Now, a lot of people were confused what their feelings were towards 9/11 or how they should feel about it or whether they should support it or not. And the same thing with the Iraq War. It's a source of confusion, and then whatever thing you induce into population, then they would go with that.
Ali, you've been organizing in the United States for a few years ago and in a more recent period and talking to Americans. And do you observe this thing that the polls are showing that George Bush has less than 30% or maybe now 31-32% approval, which means close to 70% of the people disapprove of him? Do you pick this up in the organizing, or that the majority of Americans are against the Iraq War?
Yeah, probably more than 70%.
That's good to hear.
So, yeah, of course. I mean, this is all over, especially in California, where you have a large, you know, quantity of Democrats. That is absolutely crazy. That is the case.
Okay, Hussein, you mentioned you have a picture of what, well, the way you started out and the way you started out your article, which was chilling. Let me quote from your article. By the first week of June, it was becoming clear that unless something is done very soon, Iraq would look as if the Mongol army of Hulagu was there once again. Those are really chilling words for the American reader. America, the beacon of hope, temple of liberty, to be seen, rightfully so, as what the Mongols did. What does it look like in Iraq at this point?
Well, the issue is, you know, exactly as I said, Iraq is on the verge of falling into the deep abyss, a dark age of civil war, criminality, disease and ignorance. You know, Iraq has no government, really. The government you see on television, this is not the government of Iraq. This is the government of the Green Zone. Now, the Green Zone is the part of Baghdad, which is in the center of Baghdad, which previously was the palace of Saddam Hussein. Today, it houses the Iraqi government, the U.S. Embassy, and the British Embassy. Probably this is a divine punishment that they have to suffer Saddam Hussein's
isolation
by being prisoners in their own palace. Now, the living conditions in Iraq are horrendous. You know, we don't have to go far, actually. Last week, the U.S. media picked up a message which the U.S. ambassador to Iraq, Zalmay Khalilzad, sent to Condoleezza Rice, to the State Department. And if this is true, if these were words, the words of Khalilzad, then I think there's a great deal of truthfulness in what he said.
Now, tell us more about what he said. And for Americans, probably you might have seen it in the Washington Post, as Hussein is saying. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, if Khalilzad is telling the truth, there is probably only one reason for that. He wants to get fired by Bush and Cheney for telling the truth. There's a saying which says, if you want to take a diplomat by total surprise, tell the truth. He has no experience with it. But the thing is, what he says there, he reports on what he heard from people who are employed in the U.S. Embassy in the Green Zone. Iraqis who live outside the Green Zone, but they come to work inside the Green Zone for the U.S. Embassy. And his what he tells is also chilling. I mean, he said in his own words that, you know, the country is in total control of Islamic militants who control all aspects of life, even what people wear, what people dress. Women's rights are undermined. They can't move. And then he talks about ethnic cleansing, evictions, you know, large movement of population because of the ethnic conflict which has been created by this war. I mean, on aside, he doesn't mention that in the report, but the U.S. Committee for Refugees and Immigration has reported that 800,000 Iraqis live only in Syria and Jordan. They fled Iraq since March 2003. Now, there are more than a million, actually, in other countries. But, you know, the U.S. ambassador himself is describing that. He describes the power cuts and fuel shortages, which he, in his own words, says is a drain on society. He says here, point seven, temperatures in Baghdad have already reached 115 degrees. Employees all confirmed that by the last week of May, they were getting 1 hour of power for every 6 hours without. Now, you have to imagine that those people are employed in the U.S. Embassy. They are in the upper class. So what is the conditions for people who are living in rural areas, people who are living in poor areas? Now, he says there was an improvement. The people got, in his employees, got 1 hour of free. Every three hours of a power shortage, they get 1 hour. He talks about how the whole nation is living out of generators, power generators, which they use in their houses. He gives a picture which is not very different from what I'm saying, but he puts it in diplomatic terms. Now, this is a country, you know, you don't have electricity when in the summer the temperatures are so high. It's sitting on the world's second largest reserve of oil. The conditions in Iraq are literally is hell. So these are in the words of the U.S. ambassador, one of the advocates of this war on Iraq. But he, if it's true, then he's actually telling the truth, although it's part of it. And the rest of Iraq, he's describing Baghdad, but the rest of Iraq is even worse. In Basra, for example, the city is shared by militias, terrorist gangs, and criminal gangs, and the British. They are in the category of the criminal gangs. They are, you know, when I say criminal gangs, that includes the British army, who are in Basra. There is no government. Look, the Iraqi government has no sovereignty and has no shame. The U.S. or foreign leaders land in Baghdad in the green zone. And then just a few minutes before meeting the prime minister, they say, well, I'm here in Baghdad. Why don't you come and meet me? Now, this is a country which has nothing left. So this is the policy. But it doesn't mean that has to be the condition of life. It could happen to other nations in the region, like Iran, if it's not stopped. But one thing which you mentioned, actually, I would like to
Okay, very quickly, because we have 1 minute before our break. Go ahead.
Okay, the destruction of the Iraq economy and the destruction of the U.S. economy. So there's one interesting example is on the destruction of the machine tool capacity in the United States. The same thing happened in Iraq. You know, they took huge industrial complexes in Baghdad and southern Baghdad. They took the machine tools in the time of Bremer. They auctioned the machine tools. Then they were sold as scrap metal. This is what is happening now to U.S. industry. It's being sold out, auctioned, and destroyed. Now, these are things which could be used in Iraq's case, was used for the wartime, building all kinds of ammunition and machines, but it could be used for the peacetime development. This was supposed to be a strategic asset to be protected by the occupying army. But Bremer, Schultz's asset, Paul Bremer, who became governor of Iraq, decided just to leave it for looters and destroy it. Now, this strategic asset of any nation, now it's the strategic asset of the United States itself, it's being destroyed.
Okay.
So you can imagine what these people, what is the criminality of the people who are running this policy. They can be stopped. They could be the United States in cooperation with other nations.
We're going to break now. Jose will be back in a moment. Listeners, you are listening to The LaRouche Show on Saturday, June 24th. My guests are Ali Sharaf, who is a member of the LaRouche Youth Movement, an Arabic member of the LaRouche Youth Movement, and Hussein Askari, our EIR contributor, frequent contributor, and who edits the Arabic EIR website. You can hear the LaRue Show every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time. And if you want to be involved with the LaRue movement and the LaRue Youth Movement, you can call 1-888-347-3258. Mention the LaRue Show and ask for a free copy of the latest pamphlet from Lyndon LaRouche, which contains his historic webcast on the subject of Felix Rohatyn and the Nazi bankrupting of the United States. We're not just about describing the problems, but the solutions. And right now, Lyndon LaRouche is the author of a package of emergency legislation to be passed by the U.S. Congress this year to restore the U.S. economy, particularly the United States auto industry, which is being picked dry, sold off, and outsourced. For more information on this, call 1-888-347-3258. Getting back to the show, you've been listening to The LaRue Show. Our guest, Hussein Askari, has put a number of very important issues on the table. If you want to email a question, the email address is radio@larouchepub.com. That's radio@larouchepub.com. And Hussein has already laid out some very important ideas. One, if you want to have stability in Iraq, the United States must move forward the two-state solution for Israel and Palestine. Two, economic development for the entire region, including nuclear power for water desalinization. Three, there is no way to peace in Iraq without addressing the entire Eurasian area as a contiguous body. So with those issues on the table, if you have a question, write us at radio@larouchepub.com. And I'd like to go back to our youth panel with Ali, and I think I heard others join in the youth panel. Do we have any other participants today?
Yes, Michelle, this is Scott.
Okay, Scott from Los Angeles, working in the LaRouche Youth Movement War Room for the last few weeks. Scott, have you been on long enough to have a question?
No, I'm sorry, I don't have a question yet.
Okay, Ali, any other comments you wanted to make?
Well, what I want to make is maybe a comment that is that seems to be indirectly related to the subject, but is very much the underlying thing. Now, a lot of the media, as we know, and the reason of the collapse of the economy, as you and Hussein went through, and the destruction of this country, and then also the rest of the world, is the sophistry and this question of sophistry, along with the Congress for Cultural Freedom. Now, one thing that has to be getting across to the Iraqi people and to people in the Middle East and in the Arab and Muslim world in general, it should be that this thing has to be presented in a way that it could be understood that is the cause of destruction, whether it's in the East or the West. Now, people do understand the evil intention of the forces destroying Iraq, trying to destroy Iran, and so forth. They can give perfect analysis sometimes around different things, but at some point, this thing, I think, is not understood. Hussein maybe can say a little bit more about that if he wants. But also the question of CCF, now the way to understand the West and how to correct what you have in the West.
That's the Congress of Cultural Freedom, this CIA-backed cultural warfare operation. Is that what you're referring to?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And this is also being conducted against the Middle East. Now, people do not know what is hitting them. And this is something that definitely has to be emphasized and definitely has to be worked on to pass and convey out to people. That is the fundament of the war It's basically lies, right? It's sophistry. Now, if people do only imagine that it's an evil force attacking them because they are Muslims or they are, of course, yeah, that is the case. But there's more to it, and the more to it is the sophistry.
Well, I think we saw a lot of that in the U.S. Congress this week when the Democratic senators, for the most part, only 13 of them stood up with Senator John Kerry and dared to ask questions. And I think the sophistry largely took the form of you can't cut and run. This was constantly repeated by the Republicans, by the Cheneyaks, but also by the other Democrats. Now, in the LaRouche Doctrine, it was anything but cut and run. And this is an interesting issue, using that, you know, sophist phrase over and over again, that if you're not for more war, then you're a coward who wants to cut and run. Whereas in the LaRouche Doctrine, what Mr. LaRouche was saying, we want to make more of a commitment. We want to make more of a commitment to human dignity and to relations among sovereign nation states. But I think we have to go back to that LaRouche Doctrine and look at some of the aspects of it, which Hussein, why don't, if you could elaborate on that, the role of the neighboring countries.
Yes, right.
Go ahead.
There was one thing which also you mentioned in your introduction, is this question of how Russia, China, and this group of what is called the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, what is their interest in the LaRouche Doctrine. These are things which are known. LaRouche's work is known to these governments and these regional organizations. Now, Russia and China have a crucial role there. As I said, you know, they have economic and strategic interest in the region. They also see the Bush-Cheney administration's policy of regime change in Southwest Asia as a threat directed against them. The region itself borders on the Caucasus and Central Asia. That's directly the neighborhood or the backyard of Russia and China. Also, these regions have been targeted for destabilization by British and U.S. intelligence operations. Afghanistan is just on the border with China's Xinjiang province, with a Muslim population, which is also a target of destabilization. What Russia and China and other members of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization have seen, in addition to this strategic policy failure, is the failure by the United States and Europe to address the impending collapse of the world financial and monetary system. They see the two things together now. There was a separation between these, but they recognize these facts now. And therefore, there has been some very serious discussion of this group in this recent summit, which ended last week. And actually, there have very strong indications of the interest in LaRouche's ideas by the Russian government, by China, and even by Iran. I have seen Putin's reference to the policies of Franklin Delano Roosevelt as a positive aspect of U.S. policy, which should be adopted by Russia itself. They had the publication of LaRouche, an interview with Lyndon LaRouche, before the foreign ministers of the SCO meeting in Shanghai, published in one of these Chinese leading papers. And last week, in Iran, we had the Tehran Times publishing an editorial calling for a new Bretton Woods.
Fantastic.
Now, anybody who hears
fantastic.
New Bretton, sorry?
I said fantastic.
Yeah. Now, anybody who reads new Bretton Woods, an intelligent person would say, this is Lyndon LaRouche. Now, why the Iranians are putting that out as a strategic intervention, actually, immediately after the summit by the Shanghai Cooperation Group. This is a very fascinating development. Now, the world is seeing, to a large extent, what is going on. They realize that the major dramatic changes that have taken place, but also they see the failure by the United States leadership, both the administration and the other institutions to address these problems efficiently. Now, there's Ali also, you know, he's right. I mean, he says this is a Eurasian question. This is the essence of the old British great game, destabilization of Eurasia. But Ali is also right about one aspect of current history, that the Arabs and Muslim nations are generally, or at least the last two generations, are ignorant of how political processes and historical processes function in the West. There's a certain aspect of the populations there were under the British and French colonial rule, which affected also the teaching of history, Western history of Western civilization and modern political history of the West. Now, it's seen through the eyes of French and British, which actually erases the aspect of how what was the U.S. Revolution was, the American Revolution was about. What is the significance of that? Now, people, as I said, they respected the United States until the 50s and partly through the 60s, but that's the old generation. Now, the current, my father's generation, the baby boomers of the Middle East, and the second generation, our generation, who are younger, they have no idea what this, how the United States moved from that into what we have today. Why do we have a post-industrial society which is not promoting scientific progress? What has gone wrong? Now, these are all totally in the dark. Now, one of the function of the LaRouche movement, including our Arab section in this. I mean, I work here in Sweden. I also work with the Swedish population. I'm running in a campaign here for parliament and the local district here. But also part of my work is, and Ali's and Abdusalam and other friends and members of the LaRouche movement, is to bring what are really historical processes that shape Western civilization, and also what have shaped the current strategic and economic policies in the United States specifically. Now, this is part of our work, and it gets picked up very quickly in the Arab world, because everything we put out in the name of Mr. LaRouche is immediately picked up and published and circulated in different circles. Now, if we go deeper into the epistemological and cultural aspect of what Ali mentioned on the Council of Cultural Freedom. What was the effect of that? What was the paradigm shift of the 1960s about? How was the a new generation was shaped psychologically and culturally? What is sophistry? Now, these are of crucial importance, and we are intending to actually bring them to the Arab world, because without understanding that, they will be in the dark of realizing what is wrong with the Americans, what is wrong with the Europeans, why the Congress keeps doing these mistakes the whole time. And this is, Ali is right about that. We have to make that an essential part of our work to organize the Arab population.
I'd like to turn again to Scott in our war room, because a vital aspect of this show, I think, should be a picture of the organizing the LaRouche movement is doing here in the United States, especially on the question of getting rid of Cheney and the Bush administration and bringing in LaRouche's policies. So, Scott, can you give us a few minutes of a description of that?
Sure. Well, what we set up maybe 1.5 to 2 months ago, something that Lyndon LaRouche commissioned, is a sort of strategic command center for the LaRouche movement in the United States. And the idea is, right now we're operating on a timetable of maybe 4 to 5 weeks when Congress is going to go out of session for the summer recess. And LaRouche said that he's committed to getting legislation push through the Congress before then to save what remains of the automobile industry and, of course, retool it for major projects of infrastructure. Because after the summer, these congressmen are facing the November elections, and the election mindset is going to interfere with their ability to think rationally because they want to check which way the wind is blowing in the population. So what we want to have in the war room is a overall picture of the LaRouche youth movement functions in the United States and an ability to pick up hot pieces of intelligence and cross-reference those with other things that we know are happening. For example, like plants that are shutting down. We may have a discussion in the field with someone who represents a union who may give us a lead on something, or the involvement of hedge funds in attacking certain of these industrial plants. The other thing that's been initiated out of the war room in the last couple weeks is a campaign to make Congress aware of the activity that the LaRouche movement is having in their districts.
Is this what Mr. LaRouche calls the well-aimed kick in the butt, right?
An uplifting experience?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, right. I don't know what kind of language I can use on this show, but he said we have to kick butt like butt's never been kicked before. But we have a whole, base of contacts with the LaRouche movement. Seeing that this movement's been organizing, since the late 1960s in the United States, we have talked to so many people. And we have a whole database of who those people are, their phone numbers and whatnot. We're bringing them into the fight. We're activating them to take part in this current campaign of calling their congressmen. So we're making calls out to our entire contact base on a massive level and having them contact their congressperson, arrange for meetings with the LaRouche youth movement, arrange for that congressman or a representative to attend a webcast that Mr. LaRouche is holding late July. I believe it's July 20th.
Yes, you're right. July 20th.
A week, maybe a week and a half before Congress goes out of session. The main idea is to get this legislation pushed through, to get Dick Cheney impeached. And, of course, a big part of that is restructuring the Democratic Party. Currently, they're under the influence of Felix Rohatyn and other financiers. And the legacy, the identity of Franklin Roosevelt is being suffocated. The Democrats that we talk to, a common line is that they don't want to be seen as tax and spend Democrats. They don't want to be seen as fiscally irresponsible. And really that's just, that sort of thinking shows that they don't understand economics. So, of course, our job is to not only educate them, but move them. And by bringing to their attention the kind of activity we're having, the degree of activity that we're having in their districts, we hope that is an adequate measure.
And expansion. I'm going to go to one of the emails that we received, which is right on target for the answer you just gave. I hope that Richard from Texas was just listening in the last few minutes to Scott's description of the citizen activation. What Richard from Texas writes earlier today, referencing Lynn's paper of June 22nd, time is running out for the USA. It's obvious from his comments that the Democrats are not responding to his calls to save the automobile industry's manufacturing capabilities and bring a halt to the deadly and costly conflict in Iraq and Afghanistan. Without a functioning opposition party installed in Washington and only 5 months remaining until the next national election, how can progressive citizen activists ever hope to reverse the current economic trends and bring a close to an unjustified war? I think the answer to that was given by Scott. We have 5 weeks. This is a deadline which the LaRouche movement has not arbitrarily but scientifically chosen. Between now and the close of the session of Congress, including the holidays, progressive citizen activists, you have to fight like your life depends on it, because it does. And we have stocks of thousands of pamphlets and leaflets. You can download them off of the websites so that you can mobilize your fellow citizens. Look, in the last year, the LaRouche movement, in the last 2 years, has done the impossible, especially in Texas, where Tom DeLay is a dead duck. He's out of the Congress, the first, the most powerful majority leader that that this one-party system has ever had. The Democrats have got to act like a opposition party, and the key to it is our grassroots movement. And Keisha Rogers, who ran for chairman of the Texas Democratic Party, even though she did not win that election, her message was heard loud and clear, out of the bushes, into the future. So every citizen activist who's listening, or those who are listening who know others that have to be mobilized, have them call the LaRouche Movement 800 toll-free number 1-888-347-3258. We have a strategy for not just where we have our offices, but everywhere across the country. And the kind of campaigns, I'd like to congratulate Hussein Askari on his parliamentary campaign. Hussein, you are one of the examples of the kind of candidates that are being supported and trained and educated in the United States as part of the LaRouche movement. So, Richard from Texas, that's the answer. We can do it. The Democrats are responding. They've got this fascist element inside, represented by Felix Rohatyn, a fifth column, a Trojan horse, a Cheney agent inside the Democratic Party. Let's get those sons of Bushes out of the Democratic Party, and we can get this legislation through.
Thank you.
Okay.
The thing is, it's just to emphasize this: people in around the world are actually watching what the LaRouche Youth Movement is doing. A lot of people may think that, you know, the LaRouche Movement is not in power today, but they see they are the only hope they have. People are looking for the LaRouche Movement as their last hope to turn the United States around. Now, you do have power. It's the power of ideas. It's the passion for organizing. And we sent out, actually, Ali wrote reports from the organizing in the United States. He himself has seen that. We have sent it out. We have sent out the video with Keisha's and her friend's intervention in the Texas Democratic Party convention. And this inspires people. People say, well, there is hope. And, you know, we want LaRouche to win. You have to realize you are not only fighting for the United States, you are fighting for all humanity. Other nations are looking. They say that these, like in Iraq, the Iraqis themselves can do certain things, but it will not, nothing will happen. It will depend on a change in the policy of the United States. And they are very happy to see what what Mr. LaRouche personally is doing, what the LaRouche youth movement are doing. Now we have Ali also with his help, having a LaRouche youth movement website in Arabic, which would be a great inspiration also for youth. We have young people in contact with us from Egypt, especially, but also in other Arab countries, in Yemen, even from Iraq, people send messages to us, young people. So we have it's a great moment in history. Things can go one way or the other, but it will all depend on the mobilization to make sure that you defeat those anarchist bankers, not to have a fascist world order, and put the United States on the right course. And everybody around the world would applaud that, and they will support a change in U.S. policy. They are just waiting for that change to happen.
How do listeners get in touch with the Arabic websites?
There is also, actually, the easiest way is on the LaRouche Pub website, the Executive Intelligence Review website. There is a link to international locations, and one of them is the Arabic website.
Fantastic.
I can also read, it's www.nysol.se and /Arabic.
Okay.
But the easiest way to get to it is through the Executive Intelligence Review website, larouchebob.com.
Let me go to another email that has come in from Santiago, who is asking a question about the Fitzgerald investigation, the Patrick Fitzgerald investigation, and I think I probably am in the best position to give him a quick answer. But Santiago writes, LaRouche was precise and prescient in his, quote, 1-2 punch, unquote, delivered in spring 04 when he issued both his Doctrine for Peace in Southwest Asia and his explicit denunciation of Dick Cheney as the key player within the George W. Bush administration. In this regard, my question goes to one of Vice President Cheney's possible weak flanks, namely the investigation into the plane leak being conducted by Special Prosecutor Fitzgerald. Can you offer us any clarification or update on what's going on with that investigation? There's been quite a bit of confusion regarding the indictment of Rove and also the lodging of a highly mysterious judicial action in which both sides were sealed. That is, the document said sealed versus sealed. Okay, can you shed any light into this web of intrigue? Well, Santiago, what we have done is we've decided to actually go to some of the proceedings and to read carefully Fitzgerald's own filings. There's no question that what Fitzgerald has done is he has identified the motive for Scooter Libby's lying about the about the Valerie Plame operation. Why would a lawyer with his experience turn around and lie to a grand jury, federal investigators? He knows the consequences. So what's going on? What was his motive? Patrick Fitzgerald did provide that. We have the full documentation in a recent issue of the EIR. I believe it was the June 2nd, 2004 issue of EIR, where we provided the documentation on that. As to the whole question of Rove, look, we don't know what the sealed versus sealed are, and we're not going to play any guessing games about this. But there's no need to speculate. There's no use in speculating about this. Mr. LaRouche made an important point. He said, don't expect the special prosecutor to do the work of the United States Congress. The evidence is there to impeach Cheney on the lies about the Iraq War, the Halliburton lies. We have more features coming out on that on EIR, and there's plenty of evidence for that. But we, the American citizens, must make the United States Congress fulfill its constitutional responsibility, and that requires a mobilization like never before. The forgotten man has got to be heard and make the politicians do the right thing instead of listening to the financiers. So that is the answer right now. Call 1-888-347-3258. I messed that up. It's 1-888-347-3258. You can request that copy of the EIR if you don't have it. You can also find out information about subscribing. Hussein, we have 1 minute left. I'd like you to just give us some closing ideas.
Yeah, very briefly, I think with the LaRouche Youth Movement, I can just say, you know, you have the right man in the driving seat. That's LaRouche. You are on the right course. Just fight for victory. And the world is expecting you to win. So that's my message to the LaRouche Youth Movement and to the LaRouche Movement in general.
Thank you. Ali, how about you? A quick statement before we leave. I guess we don't have Ali. I think that is a good note to end.
Hello?
On. Yes, Ali.
Oh, yeah. I would just want to say that we have economic classes going on right now here in L.A., which is intending to train people to come to the level of being advisors of government, and that is where we have to hit. And this is the advancement that the Linda LaRouche Youth Movement is doing.
Well, thank you all for joining us. Thank you, Scott, for the report from the War Room. Tune in next week for the LaRouche Show. You can also hear Keisha Rogers' speech by going to our website. Thank you, and join us next week.
Thank you.